Whatever your background, pay a visit to Guernsey. That small island in the English Channel, well endowed with the beauties of nature and a climate in which to enjoy them. And at once you will be impressed by the high standard of living, the low import duties, low taxation, low prices, and a plentiful supply of money. And you will think long and hard before returning to a mainland ridden with debt and inflation. You will wonder and be dismayed, perhaps even a little angry at the astonishing lack of political will in all our governments when it comes to removing the curse of debt finance. Guernsey was not always such a pleasant place in which to live, but in the day of their need, the people of the island were blessed with wise counselors. Would to God such a blessing might fall on all our lands in this time of extremity. In those early days of the 19th century, after Napoleon had had his fling, Guernsey was in bleak state. Far from being attractive to visitors, the conditions on the island were so depressing that some of the inhabitants began to leave for the mainland. And small wonder at that. With cut tracks for roads, high banked, muddied and streaming like rivers when the weather was unkind. No commerce, no work for the needy, nor hope of any. And the dikes in such poor state that large tracts of land were in danger of being swept away by the encroaching sea. In the town, the streets were badly paved and confined. Hardly even a horse for hire, let alone a vehicle or wheeled carriage of any kind. Such was Guernsey's case in 1813. And with a net annual revenue of £600 after meeting interest of £2,390 on a debt of £19,137, the island parliament, known as the States, had little to console them when faced with an estimate of £10,000 for renewal of the dikes. 2 years later, the States appointed a committee to look at ways of overcoming this financial blight, and in particular, to discover how best to improve the conditions of the overcrowded market, which had no shelter against the elements, and in which humanity pressed the more eager to get out, having first, of necessity, got in. The committee were well aware that the people of Guernsey could not support further taxation, and they were not slow to realize that bank borrowing incurred high interest payments, which they were unable to afford, and which, though they met these payments faithfully year by year, did nothing to diminish the principal sum borrowed. It was proposed, therefore, that the island parliament exercise its ancient prerogative and issue its own currency to finance the rebuilding of the market. The proposal was turned down. But later in 1816, the first issue of States £1 notes was agreed to, and £4,000 were printed for financing roadworks, preservation works, and the building of the monument to the late governor. These notes were to be redeemable in 3 6-monthly stages, the first one in April 1817. This way the States were able to complete the works they had undertaken, and still leave sufficient money in their coffers for other states' needs, and that with no increase to the states' debt. That was a start. But it was 3 years later when the committee was authorized to issue the sum of £4,500 in states' notes
to finance the erection of a covered market. These notes, to be redeemed in 10 years out of revenues and import duties. It was in the autumn of 1822 that the new market opened, and this was followed by other issues of states' notes to provide for the distribution of goods and services in the execution of other public works undertaken, thus stimulating the natural growth of the community. Far from having any doubts about the states' notes, the people of Guernsey were eager to have them, and by 1837, the total circulation of states' notes was £55,000. Had these notes not been issued, many important public works could not have been undertaken, let alone accomplished. This was the claim of many eminent contemporaries, and such were the improvements that visitors returned and trade increased, and the island found the prosperity it still enjoys today. However, there were problems. Unable to abide the sight of another's prosperity, old misery forever lurks behind the scenes, devising mischief to undo the good that is done. And such she was who laid complaints before the Privy Council in 1826, claiming that royal consent was necessary before the island parliament could increase its annual income. Naturally, the Privy Council required an explanation, which was duly provided by the Guernsey State's Finance Committee. That ended the matter, until two private banking institutions, set up in 1827 and 1830, began issuing notes at their own discretion, without reference to the island parliament, flooding the island with paper money. The committee had exercised great care in deciding how much to issue in states' notes. Now the newfound financial stability and continuing growth of the island community were being threatened by antisocial activity. In a spirited address to the island parliament in September 1836, Daniel Delisle Brock attacked such sharp practice, claiming that no one had the right to arrogate to himself the power to circulate a private coinage and to imprint thereon for his own profit an arbitrary value. And he argued the necessity of limiting the issue of paper money to the needs, the customs, and the benefit of the community as a whole. He did not fail to point out that permission could not be given to private individuals to play with the wealth and prosperity of society. To all of this, we say, hear, hear. Surprisingly, the banks won. Then, the records give no explanation of what happened, but the states eventually called out of circulation £15,000 of their own notes. They also agreed to issue no more than £40,000 in future. This was the situation until 1914, when the banks were not allowed to issue more money than that which was then circulating. But the states were not so restricted, and made good the opportunity of issuing money as required, so that by 1918, the states issued was £142,000. From that time, Guernsey did not look back. The state's notes in circulation rose with her growth and reached 542,000 £765 in 1958. Now the local banks are amalgamated with English institutions, and the only notes on the island are States notes and Bank of England notes. The proportion varying with the seasons. During the tourist season, there are many more Bank of England notes in circulation. In 1957, printing and handling of their £175,000 note issue cost the States a mere £450, while a loan of that amount would have meant an annual interest payment of £11,383. The experiment began in 1817, and the inflation the people of Guernsey now experience is all imported. Much of their food and all their equipment is shipped in, and as prices rise outside, so do they rise on Guernsey. The Island Parliament has ever been prudent in the issue and cancellation of its notes, and there is no reason to suppose it would be otherwise. Moreover, the people of the island prefer them, since there is no debt or interest attached to them. That is surely not surprising. However, what is surprising, indeed incredible, is the fact that this success, so well attested to in the annals of the island, and there for all to see, apparently fails to move our governments to consider that there might, after all, be a lesson in it for them, and a hope for us. In the words of Edmund Burke, "All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that the good men do nothing." Join us. Help publicize the truth about money. Write to your representatives in Parliament or Congress, pressing them to do their homework on this vital subject, untrammeled by the false teachings of the priests of usury and debt finance, and call on them to require our governments to outlaw such evil practices. It is essential, however, that you become well informed about the reality of money and its place in the community. Therefore, you are enjoined to write to the addresses in the cassette liner for details of books and literature. God be with you.